Welcome to episode 494 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how much the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps make our world smaller and bring us closer together. So here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. My name is Donna, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy and George. We are also excited to welcome our good friend, Leah Giudice, owner of Trova Travel Group. She's a local agent here in the area. This week, Leah is here to take us on a journey to Rwanda and recap her recent experience with gorilla trekking. Ooh, how to prepare, what to expect on the trek, and what it's like to find yourself face to face with a giant gorilla, or even a little gorilla. So let's get started. Welcome, Leah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell us, okay, so you actually, let's start from the beginning. You traveled from here in the Raleigh Triangle.
Yes.
And how did you get there?
So my way there was easier than my way home, I will say. It was fairly easy. I did Raleigh to Atlanta, Atlanta, Amsterdam, Amsterdam, Kigali. And so it was just a short flight to Atlanta, an 8-ish hour flight to Amsterdam, and another 8-hour flight to Kigali, which wasn't so horrible. Coming home, it was Kigali to Nairobi. So that was a very short flight. And then a 15-hour flight from Nairobi to JFK.
Ouch.
Yeah, that one was rough. And then JFK to Raleigh. So.
So would you recommend breaking it up in Europe?
I mean, if possible, sure. There were a couple options where maybe you'd only have two flights. But I like my airline of choice. So I had to do it the hard way. But there wasn't a way home that was less than three flights, many of them four flights. So it also depends on days of the week and such. But it was complicated.
Gotcha. Okay, so when you arrived in Kigali, tell us about where you were.
So the Kigali airport, it was quite small. We basically walked on the tarmac and walked into the airport. Or no, we had a bus drive us to the door, and it was very, very small. And you had a visa that you would purchase on arrival. You could do it pre, but it was less expensive and super easy to do upon arrival, $50. And you can use US cash. So carry cash.
So did your guides tell you just to wait?
Yes. And I had a representative meet me, which was the US dollar goes pretty far. So it was really nice to have that touch. Not necessary, super easy to arrive and do it yourself. But after a long day of traveling, it is really nice to just have someone kind of usher you through and take you where you need to go so you don't have to stress or try and figure out what you're doing.
Fantastic.
I have a question. Did you have to do any like vaccinations or things like that to go to this part of the world?
That's a great question. There are recommendations, but nothing is actually required. I did do the Hep A and Hep B shots. I'm traveling enough countries that it's suggested, and I hadn't done them before, so I got that taken care of. I did do anti-malarial meds, which you start taking 2 days before you travel, and then take a tablet each day that you're there, and then a couple days, I can't remember how long after you return. Maybe not very long, but you know, I went to a doctor to kind of go through, and I went on the CDC website, and I actually went to Passport Health too, and just kind of went through and saw what I felt was super important to me and what I didn't think was that necessary. Everybody has their own comfort level, if you will. I know that yellow fever is something that some people feel strongly about getting. I did not get that vaccination. I did get polio, mostly because that kind of research during COVID, and I thought that wasn't a bad thing. And I definitely was due for a tetanus shot, so got those things taken care of.
Cool.
So your arm was sore.
Yes.
Gotcha. So tell us about once you got there on site.
So I arrived kind of late at night, but what was great, it was early January, and I had no idea that they would be so big into Christmas. So everything was still very decorated and lit up with Christmas decorations, which was really cool.
That's cool.
It's a big city, Kigali, but it's very spread out. Rwanda is referred to as the land of 1,000 hills. So it's very, very hilly. And as someone that used to do half marathons, I never want to do one in Rwanda. but it was, the temperature was wonderful. It's never really very cold. It's kind of a great temperature most year round. It was not a popular time to go in January. It was kind of after the holiday season rush. So it was really nice in terms of it not being overcrowded. But it was like in the 70s and 80s most of the time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, not that's humid. Nice.
So that was great. So not much happened upon arrival other than getting to my hotel and meeting my driver, who would be our driver for the entire trip, which was another amazing factor of this trip. I don't know that I'd want to do this on my own. Having someone that knows the roads and can, like, just even knowing where a good bathroom stop is.
Yeah.
Is worth its salt.
Yes. And so it was really nice to have someone take care of that for you. Like many countries that are very spread out, there it's not great to drive at night either. So mm-hmm. having someone that's experienced as well. So yeah.
How many people were in your party?
There were four of us.
Okay. So you probably had like a SUV type car or like a van?
Yeah. Well, one of the like safari looking vehicles. That
oh, nice.
Okay, was cool. Six, but you could open the top and looked unnecessary when you get picked up at the airport. But my driver said, you're going to think this is excessive now, but wait till we go into Volcanoes National Park and that area, and you'll see what it can do and why we're using it.
Okay. So. Nice.
So how long did you actually stay in Kigali?
We stayed two nights before we headed up to Volcanoes National Park. And I honestly wish I would have stayed a little bit longer. There's actually a pretty thriving fashion and art scene there. I'm really glad that I took the time to do the Genocide Museum. I've seen Hotel Rwanda, but going to that museum was really humbling, and to just have firsthand accounts of people and it being from 1994 was really just sobering.
Yeah.
So and having just a little bit of time to kind of acclimate to the time change, it wasn't a horrible time change though. It was only 7 hours from the East Coast, so that wasn't.
That's similar to Europe. Yeah.
So bad. it was not bad.
Cool. So then you had to go all the way up to the volcanoes.
Yes. Yes. And it was a very cool experience. Volcanoes National Park is a bit away from wherever there are suitable hotels. 30, 45 minutes. But you never know what's going to happen on the road. When we were there, we got stuck waiting because the King of Jordan was staying at a hotel on the road, and we had to wait for he and his entourage to get to where they needed to go, and then us people could proceed on.
The low people.
The low people, yes.
So talk about your hotel. Sorry, Donna.
Yes.
Like, I want to hear about the hotel at the Five Volcanoes Boutique Hotel.
So Five Volcanoes was the place that we stayed to do the gorilla trekking. We stayed there for 3 nights. It was convenient. Everything was included on site, all your meals, because you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. So you're not able to walk around or go get a bite somewhere, especially, you know, after dark. You're just kind of hanging out at wherever it is that you're staying. Everyone was very helpful. They helped you with your gear in the morning. And then when you got back from your trek, they were there to take your boots off and clean them for you and give you a little foot massage, which was one of my favorite parts. And feed you because you're, you know, kind of tired after your trek. But if I were to do it again, I think that I'd want to go up north, up the road a little bit where the King of Jordan stayed and stay at the one and only Gorilla's Nest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, might as well.
Yeah. And I should actually talk about the retreat that we stayed at in Kigali. I apologize for backtracking, but it's a really interesting story. It's a couple from Manhattan that opened the hotel and they first started by opening a restaurant and really helping the local community get jobs and train them in hospitality. And it grew into a first hotel, which is more of a four-star property, and then they grew and built the retreat, which is a 5-star property, and really have become such a huge part of the Kigali community and employ so many people and have a really wonderful story. It's a husband and wife, and the husband actually published a book, which is in every room. And of course, I started reading and had to bring a copy home. So I would feel horribly if I did not mention how special that hotel was.
Cool.
The hotel that's actually in Volcanoes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about all the hotels. So you got your food, your meals and everything kind of included with that. So what did you eat?
The food was actually much better than I thought. It was there's a foodie scene happening. Their fruits were delicious. Everything was it was like traveling most places. I thought it would have been a little bit more specialized and regional, maybe like my trip to Morocco last year. And it wasn't. It was very, very forward thinking. And one of the places was a little interesting, but where it was a breakfast dish that said it had a chili sauce on it on an egg dish or whatever, and it was barbecue sauce. Like, so it was an interesting interpretation. But the food was really good and fresh and very gourmet. So I can't think of a like dish because there wasn't anything truly local, but everything that I had was really good and we were always surprised.
Well, there you go. That's all that matters. So now let's get to the gorillas.
Okay.
So you're up there in the volcanoes, you know, with the gorillas. You're finally there. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So what's great about the way they have begun doing this is that the government, the national park actually manages the gorilla trek. So everyone, no matter where you're staying, no matter who you booked your trip with, has to acquire a permit, a daily permit to go to the gorillas. The permit is a high dollar cost. It's $1,500 per day. And what that does is it puts the money back in the research of protecting the gorillas and tracking them, making sure that they don't go extinct. It's really helped teach the people of Rwanda and Uganda's kind of on the border as well. You can do gorilla trekking there as well. It teaches them that like there's a life to be made, a living to be made by protecting the gorillas instead of poaching the gorillas. And so that, and they're really into empowering women. Our first day, our first guide was a woman, and that's really, really nice to see. So everybody has to go to a meeting point and get a briefing, basically sign a waiver and such. Now, depending on, this is where it depends on how you went. I used a DMC for those that don't work in the travel industry. It's a destination management company that specializes in countries in Africa. And we had all of this handled prior to. So we had already signed our waiver. We already knew what type of trek we would do. And our guide just did all of this on behalf of us. So early in the morning, we just got to sit there and drink a cup of coffee or tea. Or if you're me on the first day of trekking, I was really nervous and really excited and just kind of babbling. but you also communicate what type of trek you would like. There are three different types. There's easy, medium, or difficult. And easy is not easy. That does not mean flat. It does not mean it's going to be easy. It's just going to be easier than the others. And
so you're not rappelling off of mountains then.
Well, hopefully. So we chose easy both days, and they were both very different treks, but I'm so glad that I had a little bit of both. The first day was relatively flat and relatively free of brush, and was really easy to get to the gorillas after a bit of work. And it was flat where we ran into the gorillas. The second day was on an incline and a lot of brush, where you have a team of people that are traveling with you. So you get assigned a guide, and they have a walkie-talkie, and so there's usually one or two of those. The maximum amount of people in any group is 8 trekkers, if you will. The first day there were only 5 of us, so it was my party of 4 and then one other woman. And then we each get a porter, and the porter carries your backpack. You have a walking stick if you'd like it, or two. They'll carry that. They'll carry your drink or whatever. And they also help you, whether they hand you their hand to get you over some sort of stick in the ground, over a puddle, over an incline, whatever type of obstacle you might be facing, because they do it so often that they know the area. And then there,
it doesn't sound like super easy.
It's definitely not easy. No, this is not for the faint of heart. It doesn't mean you have to be uber fit. By no means, but it definitely, people with mobility issues should not be doing this. There's no easy way to get you there. So, you know, you have to be able to walk a couple miles in the brush. You have to have the right gear. And some of those things are what they call gaiters, that cover your shoes and bottom of your pants. And it's basically to protect you from the brush that's going to hit you. Some of the plants are actually a little bit, will hurt you through your pant material. And then also so bugs don't crawl up into your
hitchhikers
shoes. Yeah. Yes. So it was a learning experience in a lot of ways. So then it's just like gear that you have, you know, it's good to wear long sleeves and light clothing and whatnot. But there were women walking in jeans. So it was really soup to nuts what people are comfortable in hiking, essentially.
How long were the actual treks?
It depended that, so the gorillas don't stay in the same place every night. They move. So one of the other positions is the tracker. So the guide is always talking to the tracker. Trackers live out in the park for 2 weeks at a time. So they like follow specific families. And, so it just depends. The nice thing about the gorillas is that at the time of day, it's always in the morning that you go, they're kind of eating and resting. So they're not super mobile at that time. They're kind of just hanging out. And so it's fairly easy to get to them once you know where they are. They don't move around very much. So so it was probably the first day, it was maybe, I would say 45 minutes to an hour to get to them. With some breaks, we did have a couple people that needed breaks, for taking water, or just cause, the fifth person in our group, she had two walking sticks that she needed and had a little bit of mobility issue. So I wouldn't have recommended that she did it. So that day was like 45 minutes to an hour, and the next day was maybe 30 minutes, but a harder hike. And then once you find the gorillas, you get 1 hour with them. And there's one more position. There's the guide, the trackers, the porters, and then there's a ranger. And the ranger has a gun to basically watch out for other animals, because there are elephants and buffalo that that you could run into on your trek. We didn't see any, but it's basically to just scare them away, not to injure them.
Wow.
I was happy to learn about that. But
I mean, I would have liked to see an elephant too. You know? Yeah.
So, you know, it takes a whole team of people to get you to where you're going. And then once you find where the gorillas are, the porters stay back and hold your stuff. They do make us wear masks since COVID, because we don't want to transmit anything that we might have to the gorillas, and vice versa. We do share 97% DNA with gorillas, which is really interesting. Yeah. And so I would say that that was one of the lowlights, just because we couldn't really take photos without the masks. And we were so close, you know, but
yeah, I saw your pictures and I couldn't believe how close you were to those gorillas, and they were like right there.
Yeah. They touched a couple of us. They like wow. You moved out of their way. It was, I didn't know how I was going to react the first time I saw one, and I turned into like a 12-year-old girl, giddy. but then when that, it was a kind of young gorilla. It wasn't like full grown yet. The first one that I saw, it was when I first saw the first silverback, that I was like, oh, like, yeah. Wow, it was just so powerful but beautiful. And I needed to suss out, like, how are they going to respond to us? But before you come into contact with them, the guide kind of briefs you on noises that you make, if they do a certain thing, what sound you make, if they look a certain way, how to place your body, you bend down, don't make eye contact. So you feel pretty comfortable with the instruction, and then the trackers and the porters and all of that are making the sounds along with you. So that was really interesting.
So did you feel like there was ever any kind of aggression or anything?
Oh no, they're so gentle. Oh. And they're vegetarians. So yeah. That, it was just really interesting to watch them play and feed and see the children. The young ones definitely play like, you know, rough and tumble mm-hmm. boys. And we watched two, I think they were like 18 months or 2 years, chase each other in a circle for 5 minutes, like just having so much fun, and watching them pound on their chest and having the guide like translate basically, oh, that one just told his brother, I am strong. And then mama comes along and does the same thing. And it's like, yeah, you're strong, but I'm stronger, cut it out kind of thing. So it's really amazing to watch their family dynamic, because you can see who the troublemakers are. You can see just everyone listens to the silverback. He leads, like if he moves, they move, and there's no challenging of his seniority and power, which is not the same with chimpanzees. So it was really interesting. And they really were not bothered by us being near them at all. They just were like, okay, you're in my way. I want that bamboo or whatever. Cool. And so just move a little bit, but they have, you know, very comfortable with us, which I was really surprised by.
Well, they see people every day.
Every day. And it's nice that they control it to be an hour. So, you know, most of their day, they're not dealing with it. So, yeah.
What did you do with the rest of your day? Because you had to get back like lunchtime, right?
Yeah. And so that's where, there's, you know, pool, there's spa, there's, mm-hmm. you know, it was nice to read a nice book. And, you know, when you go on trips like this, they love to feed you and have a 2-hour dinner. So, but because you're up so early, you're fine kind of turning in early for the night as well. So even though it seemed like a long day, it went by really quickly. And you're so on such a high from seeing the gorillas that, and we did stop at a cultural center to like where local crafts and stuff were on the way back one day. And the day that we got into town, we stopped at the Ellen DeGeneres campus for Diane Fossey, which was opened, I want to say in 2022, maybe even 2023, it was being finished during COVID. And basically, Ellen DeGeneres' hero from the time she was 12 was Diane Fossey. So she is really involved in preserving her work. And the campus is really interactive and teaches you a lot about the work that Diane Fossey did, the gorillas that were there for many years and some that are still there, and also is a research center for people getting into working with the gorillas and guiding and such. So that was a really cool stop.
Fantastic. Cool.
And one of the ways, I did not know this before going, gorillas are identified by their nose print. It's like humans' fingerprints. And so there were, in the Diane Fossey campus, there were, you could quiz like, what gorilla are you like? And so, because I always buy a Christmas ornament when traveling, I bought the nose print of the gorilla that I quizzed. So yeah, that's kind of cool that's how they identify the gorillas.
That's I want to cool. know who drew the short straw and had to go print the gorilla's nose.
I don't know how they do that. That's a good question.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And our second day trek was very different. There were a couple silverbacks that day. And there were, I called it bodily fluid day. Saw a lot of gorillas picking their nose.
It was like not really caring. Yeah.
Like humans. we got to see some mating, which I was not expecting. The guide's like, "Oh, that noise means he's gonna mate. Come on, let's follow." And we're all like, "Wait, we're supposed to follow you? We're supposed to be warriors right now?"
They need some privacy. We don't need to see.
Yeah. No, come. Okay. So yeah, that was a very different day than it was play day the day before.
Was it a different family of gorillas? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, it was. The first family was 16 gorillas, which we saw probably, I would say, maybe 10 of the 16. Mm-hmm. And day two was a family of 18, and we probably saw 12. There were a lot of young ones in that one.
You said there were several silverbacks. I mean, so do they have a hierarchy?
Yes. There were at least two, maybe a third in the second day's family, but one is the like in charge. And then that's how they'll break off, is one of the younger of the silverbacks may break off into his own family eventually. And some of the women, the females will break off at times too. But
they don't tell them. Fascinating, Leah.
I know it was. I was like, I'm getting schooled in gorilla here. Nice. Yeah, and it was also, I would be remiss if I did not talk about how important the porters are. I think that it costs $10 to have a porter per person. I know that some people have even used two for themselves, but it just makes you want to put money back into the economy and, you know, tip them like crazy. They're so kind and so interested in you and your life and what you're doing there. And, you know, two out of the four of us traveling together, well, actually all of us were business owners. And so the young girls that were our porters were so interested in that and so inspired and had so many questions. So that was like a real relationship too, because you're with them for a few hours and, you know, you kind of get attached to them.
That is cool. I like hearing about like how women are so prominent in these roles. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a real focus. Rwanda has a female president right now too. So,
about that?
Yeah,
fantastic.
Also, the sixth safest country in the world.
Wow,
it's very safe. They're very proud. It's very clean. They might have a very humble home, but they are sweeping the street. They are, you know, everything is where it should be. There's nothing out of place. And one of the things that our driver told us is that they collectively parent. So there are lots of people walking on the street. They're just walking and walking. And children have two shifts of school. So we would frequently see children walking to school and walking home from school when we made our drives up to the park. And they're in their uniforms. It's so cute. But there were a couple boys that were being boys and like trying to throw rocks at our car and like maybe not giving us the most delightful hand signals. And our guide said that if we weren't in the vehicle with him, he would have stopped and told them that they were being naughty and that they're, you know, collectively supposed to like parent and help children know what's right and wrong. I thought that was pretty cool.
Interesting.
Well, I would have told him, like, you can stop on, you don't have to keep going on my account. Go ahead. Tell those boys.
Cool them, yeah.
And French used to be the primary language, but it's really being overtaken by English. And then they do have their own language as well. I just don't remember what it is called. But
so is it common for them to be like trilingual or bilingual? Basically,
at least bilingual.
Yeah,
and probably many more of the older people would probably speak three languages.
Yeah, because everyone else in the world does. Okay, never mind.
Yes, get off our soapbox.
Yes, yes. No hard feelings, though.
Yeah, I know. It's just kind of like one of these things that I'm like, why are we anyway? It's like a different podcast. Yeah.
So you also say on here you went. You went chimpanzee trekking.
Yes. So after a couple of days up in the Volcanoes National Park, we headed down to the Nyingwe Forest, and we stayed at the one and only Nyingwe House, and that was on a tea plantation. So we are in the area of the country that there are many tea plantations, and it was a working tea plantation. So that was very very interesting to be staying on property and have people working because they still handpick the tea in Rwanda. So we had a tea experience at the one and only one afternoon when we got back from chimpanzee trekking. So that there's a lot of activities to do during your downtime at the one and only. There's a great spa, but they had a welcome. Well, the night that we got there, several other people had arrived at the hotel. It was not a very big place, and we had a welcome performance of local dancers and drummers. That was an amazing welcome, like the best sunset I've ever seen. So it was really emotional welcome. They just do it right. It's a brand that I will definitely recommend. Nice. So that was about a 5.5 hour drive. So that took up a good bit of the day. And then we had our wonderful meal. And then we did a chimpanzee trek, which I thought was going to be easier than the gorilla trek, but I was wrong.
Did you still pick the easy one? Did they give you levels?
So we asked for an easy one, but chimpanzees move a lot faster than gorillas. And so, and it rained and it was a higher elevation. And we did not see any chimpanzees either on our chimpanzee trek. So it, and halfway through the trek, we didn't care that we weren't seeing any chimpanzees. We just wanted to get out. So I'm happy to have taken that experience first, because I have not sent clients to Gorilla Trek and have these experiences yet. And so I can be better prepared for my clients. And that is much of the reason why I travel, to be able to do things to speak of them firsthand and correct all the mistakes that I might make.
Oh, yeah.
travel poorly so you don't have to.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, I definitely... I was overconfident on that day, and the porters were super important that day, and I basically gave them all of the cash that I had. I was like, you saved my life.
So you didn't see chimps, but did you see anything else?
We did not see anything else on that day because it did rain, and so that kind of made everything kind of scatter. But our driver, who was waiting for us, the chimps all passed by our truck, so he saw the chimps.
Of course he did.
Yes. Wow. But to, because this is why I love some of these surprise and delight moments. So our guide had told our hotel that we had a rough hike and that we did not see any chimpanzees. And so when we arrived back at the one and only, there were a bunch of staff members waiting for us when we pulled up. They took off all of our boots. They had two massage therapists waiting for us to give us neck massages because we had such a hard hike for 5 minutes each. And then I went to our room, and they had in their hotel gift shop, they had these very nice handmade chimpanzees. And there were two in each room and a handwritten note saying, "We're so sorry that you didn't see chimps today, but we didn't want you to leave without the memory." And like, just a really nice, thoughtful note that, that just, you know, kicked it up a notch. And then after we left to do a tea experience, and when I got back, they had drawn me a tea bath. Wow. So nice. yes, it was amazing. So I do remember the chimpanzee day fondly, just. And then the day after the chimpanzee trek, there was we went to look at colobus monkeys, and that was much easier. They're a lot and very easy to see. And it turns out that chimpanzees actually eat those monkeys. So
whoa.
Yeah, so I learned a lot about that. I thought I loved chimpanzees, but they're mean.
So they're actually closer to people.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. How do you say it? Colobus monkeys? They're the ones with like the tufts of white hair, right?
They have a little bit of white hair. And then there's also like golden monkeys that are not the same. But because we're in the national forest, they're just everywhere. I mean, they're actually on the property. Like, we were told when we checked into our room, don't leave our patio door open because you will have a monkey in your room and you'll find a monkey patty. You can hear them walk along your rooftop of your room. And so there was one at breakfast with us. They're just kind of like seeing
it. And you have to like, you're like, don't feed it. There's a little bit anyway, but don't feed it.
It will come and try and get food. But
yeah. That's cool.
It was very cool.
Nice.
Leah, this sounds amazing.
It was. I have not taken a safari yet, but I think it's going to be hard to compare to this experience. I think it will still be amazing, but it's going to be hard to compare to getting as up close and personal as we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that's a definite once in a lifetime trip.
It's nice to hear that Rwanda has come back so strong too, because I remember that whole era too. And you don't hear much more, you know, so that's very inspiring. And I'm glad they're focusing on sustainability with their travel and stuff, and that spreading the wealth to everybody, because that's what I think makes it worth it, you know?
Yeah, they've healed in a way that others could learn from. They've really become one as people. They're also like, they don't use single-use, like they don't have plastic bags in a lot of countries in Africa, but like, it's amazing to me how they're able to do it so much easier than we are, you know, like, yeah. And they actually asked that we don't bring plastic in, you know, okay. So, you know, I had my toiletries and such, but I took them all out with me,
yeah.
Because I wanted to respect, their, you know, frame of mind. And my driver, you know, I was able to talk to him about his, dealings with the genocide, and he lost 60 family members on both sides of his family.
Wow.
So he had a real personal account, and to see how he is thriving now was really incredible.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think there's always a story like that to be had when yeah. you head to pretty much anywhere in Africa, but especially a place like Rwanda.
Anything else you want to add, Leah?
I could talk about it for days. So just if you think you want to go, you do want to go. I definitely would yeah. say that you will not regret taking the trip to Rwanda. It is worth every penny and every hour on the airplanes.
Okay. Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because we'd love to hear from you. So thank you so much, Leah, for sharing your amazing experience with us. Yay!
Yay. Thanks for having me.
So on behalf of Sandy, George, and myself, Donna, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.